Welcome to Fine Music Radio's Creative Teen Talk. I'm Mark Falconer, and joining us today is Mia Arden, a Cape Town-based writer, novelist, columnist, journalist, and screenwriter. Mia's writing explores the politics of gender, race, identity, sexuality, mental health, and her debut novel, Mermaid Fillet, is published by Aquela in 2020, a fantastic novel, long-listed with the Sunday Times CNA Literary Awards, and I'm sure we're going to hear much more about that really wonderful novel. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you very much, Mark.
We start this conversation often talking about reading, the power of reading. Mm. And maybe we could start with your own reading history, what you're reading at the moment, how you got to be using the written word with such power in your own life.
Yeah, sure. So I started reading. I read a lot more when I was younger, to be quite frank. I was an avid reader growing up in that school. I read much less now because I'm just lazier. So I consume more television and more Netflix. But I grew up reading quite a lot of Afrikaans literature, like André Brink and Marita van der Pfeiffer. So I started reading, I think, predominantly in Afrikaans when I was in high school for some reason. And then, yeah, it kind of tapered off towards my, like, latter years. So I still try and read, but I find that unless something grips me within the first, like, 10 pages, I generally just put it down. So I don't know if I'm the best reader. Yeah.
You've got a really fascinating educational background, because I noticed from your CV that you've done classical civilization, you've done philosophy, and you've done creative writing.
Yes. That was a great deal of reading. So I read the classical texts, I read Homer, I read a lot of philosophy. I still read Nietzsche. So I did.
Shame, man.
There's nothing uplifting about what I'm reading at the moment. But yeah, a lot of my reading was like academic and classical in that sense. So, you know, it didn't really feel like leisure at the time because that was all part of my studies. But I can look back at those texts now and read them with like a more leisurely eye.
Mm. I think the habit of reading is something that kind of becomes part of your life, and the worldview that you take from your reading is something that you carry through for forever. Even if you're not reading at this very moment a lot, I do think that part of who you are as a writer, as a creator, as someone who has a voice with, well, not say the only the young, but with society at large, you've got a really, really important role to play. And obviously the written word is enormously important for you.
Yes, absolutely. I think reading is changing. Like, I read on social media, I read people's posts, I read articles, I read all the time, but it's not just books. I think we're living in an age where books, I'm reluctant to say it, but they're becoming almost archaic. So unless we can make books more accessible through other media, like what I've tried to do is create a playlist, to create social media accounts, to create character cards and images, things to accompany books, I think we run the risk of them just, yeah, becoming archaic. So I think as important as the written word is, we need to find ways of modernizing literature.
That's really interesting coming from a writer.
Yeah, I'm not the writer's writer. I'm like, I find writers generally can be quite precious about literature as an art form, and I think that that's quite a risky position to hold in today's world.
And I mean, I think that a lot of, particularly younger listeners would agree with you. I think that it's much more difficult to get kids to read, but clearly there is something in your makeup that delights, no, I don't know if delights is the right word, but grasps the opportunity to tell stories. In Mermaid Fillet, there are a lot and very diverse stories. And you embrace them, and you don't shy away from any of the harsher realities. It's absolutely, I used the word earlier, transporting. I think it is. It takes you to a place, certainly as a white, middle-aged male, it took me to places that I found really uncomfortable. But I found that it was important to be there.
Right, yeah. I try not to shy away from harsher truths and harsher narratives, but it doesn't really feel to me like it's not an effort to do so, you know. I think that dealing with, like, issues that are maybe more uncomfortable, like mental illness and like gender-based violence or whatever it may be are things that are so front of mind for me anyway that it almost feels common ground, so the discomfort isn't there for me. And I think that younger readers or younger consumers don't find these topics as alienating because we're in a world and a time where we are, as a community, as a generation, just more transparent about these things.
And how wonderful and important it is for younger readers to find stories that they can relate to or be inspired by or learn from. The work that you're doing is can't be overemphasized.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit about what worked for you as a pupil when you were at school. I mean, maybe it's not a particularly interesting area for you to go into, but when you were reading at school, how important was narrative, was the written word, was fiction?
I mean, fiction, look, English was where I excelled, so I enjoyed everything that I read. I mean, even Shakespeare, which was incredibly difficult to decipher. I enjoyed reading and writing, so I enjoyed writing fiction and reading fiction from school level. I would always make notes. I'd always allow myself to get lost in, you know, in the books, in the prescribed texts that we had. But I would also, I mean, I used to go to the library, which is not something that's really done anymore. But I was encouraged to do that, to go to the library, to pick up books, to read books. My mother was very encouraging of reading. So I think the written word was very important, reading it and writing it. So like, you know, at school I would have just lots and lots of notebooks that I would write in. Now I just make notes on my phone. So the written word has always kind of been important for me.
There's a kind of a really inspiring courage that you have where you plunge into areas, sex, race, gender and gender-based violence, gangs, and you do it, seem to do it quite fearlessly, and also in some of your journalistic writings. What gives you that courage?
I really enjoy writing violence. I enjoy writing violent scenes. I enjoy writing about violence. I find it really natural to write violent scenes. So, I mean, I was just saying to Vanessa earlier how much I love Tarantino. So I just love, I love writing violence. It's a challenge to do it in a way that isn't gratuitous, that is, you know, natural to a narrative. But I feel like there's a catharsis that happens when you write about these things.
Is that a personal catharsis, or do you think there's a kind of social catharsis in it, or do you think that there's something that's also ultimately transforming in aim?
I think maybe both. For me, there is definitely a personal catharsis in writing more violent, more stark scenes. I think reading these kinds of scenes and narratives is cathartic socially as well. I think maybe that's why people latch onto them. I think initially I was like, maybe it's just shock value, but I think that it is cathartic both reading and writing things that people only think about, that they, you know, it's things that aren't spoken out loud. So I think there is a collective kind of cathartic experience that happens in any kind of narrative that does explore those unspoken, terrible, dark thoughts.
So, I mean, I think that what was really inspiring for me in reading not just your journalism but also your fiction writing is the fearlessness with which you kind of plunge into those areas, and you don't seem to be kind of cowed at all by any kind of social worries. You know, you go where angels really do fear to tread.
Yes, well, I mean, I've been writing for quite a few years now, and I used to be really nervous about how my work was received. I mean, I used to write for Marie Claire and Cosmopolitan, I mean, those kinds of publications where you get immediate feedback on the articles that you write, and you can get what they call dragged by social media if you say the wrong thing, write the wrong kind of thing. And so I had an instant feedback loop for years. Yeah. And so that kind of desensitized me to being fearful of how my work is received. I just did too much of it to be fearful and scared of how my writing is going to be perceived by other people. So I think it just comes with doing it more and just, kind of developing a tougher skin.
I think that lots of writers could take a leaf out of your book for. But having said that, there are passages that are really tender, really, really delicately done and very, very beautiful and lyrical. You really managed to cover a range of different approaches, and it's really impressive writing. you've spoken about many mediums, so maybe you could just explore that a little bit more. I mean, I completely agree with you that I think kids are much more focused on kind of more social media than novels. I mean, I hope that will translate to novels. But what do you think?
I think that kids and teens today are more creative potentially than they've ever been. I mean, kids are creating content on TikTok, on Instagram, that content that is incredibly creative. Mm. I mean, videos, video content. I mean, the way they image themselves, their self-image is curated, which is, I don't know, it can be a bad or a good thing. But I mean, there's a self-awareness and a self-reflexiveness and a constant creativity that comes from posting on social media, creating a profile, curating yourself and your identity that is an incredibly creative act in itself. And kids are also always reading. They're reading on social media, they're writing posts, they are engaged in the written word all the time. So I think kids are more creative. I think they are writing more and reading more. And the idea that social media has taken kids away from reading, I think, is a bit of a fallacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, and I think that is exactly right. And I think that we do need to be focusing, particularly in schools, on social media and using those kinds of platforms to encourage pupils to kind of explore themselves and their world. Talking about that, you use, I'm not going to say you use words as weapons, but you use them as scalpels maybe to kind of expose parts of society that are not often looked at or explored or examined. And one of the areas that you look at is mental health. You know, I think the scalpel analogy is maybe a useful one, because not only is it painful sometimes, but it is also potentially quite healing. Mm. How would you respond to that? Is that what you have as an intention?
Well, mental health for me is quite a personal topic. I mean, I struggle with mental illness myself. So I like the idea of a scalpel because, I mean, it's incisive, and also you have to be quite precise and quite, you know, it hurts. It hurts to write about mental illness and to write about mental health. But I think there is a healing that happens because you're processing trauma, you're processing depression, you're processing things that are deeply, deeply wrong within yourself, within your soul. There's something to be said for writing about mental illness when you have mental illness. It doesn't necessarily fix it, because mental illness can't be fixed. It can only be treated. So it works as, you know, as a tool, the same way I think maybe therapy works as a tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you say mental health can't be cured.
I don't believe it can be cured. I think it can be treated. I think it can be managed. But I think if you have, you know, if you have a diagnosis, particularly if it's a chronic diagnosis, the idea that it can be fixed is actually quite a harmful one.
Let's look at some of the kind of the associated arts. With your educational background, the associated arts are something that you probably are interested in. Do you listen to music? What is your kind of creative process when you write? How do you go about it? Do you sit down and just hope that inspiration comes, or is it quite disciplined, or how does it work for you?
It's haphazard. It's all over the place.
I'm so glad to hear that.
There's nothing organized about my creative process. I have notes everywhere. My phone is full of notes. I have like notepads with just everywhere, all over my flat. I write things down as I witness them, as I hear things, as I see things that are just weird, disturbing, or just sweet, or whatever. It's everywhere. And so when I have to sit down and write something comprehensive, I have to, you know, reach out for all the, I have to kind of try and compile ideas and notes that are just all over the place. So I don't have a set time that I write. I don't have a set mode. I usually, I sometimes drink when I write, but I
maintain that. Excellent.
I try and edit sober. I know it's cliche, but yeah. So I drink when I write, I edit sober, and I just, yeah, I have notes everywhere. Look, when I put it all together, I write in a Word document. But I mean, so like I said, I've got notes in my phone. I've got notes on hard copy notepads. And when I sit down and put it all together, then I'm usually writing on a computer, on a laptop.
And do you have music playing? And
yes, usually I have really loud rap music playing in the background. Yeah, I usually write with music, all kinds of music, but predominantly, yeah, a lot of rap.
Your writing seems to be characterized by dialogue. There's a lot of self-dialogue in your journalism. And your novel is kind of held together with dialogue.
Mm.
So it's almost like a fictionalized screenplay.
Yeah,
there seems to be dialogues going on inside your head when you...
Yes, constantly. I mean, there's a self-talk that I just can't escape inside my head. So I pick up really interesting pieces of dialogue in just listening to people.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to myself all the time. So writing dialogue is maybe the place that I write from.
Mm.
And the plot and structure and characterization will maybe come afterwards.
Mm. That's fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about what plans you have for the future. Are you planning or working on a new book?
So I am starting to work on a new book. I'm doing a writer's residency next month. And during this month of residency, which is...
Where is that at UCT?
It's in the Somerset East in the Eastern Cape, which is in the middle of nowhere, which is great for a writer's residency. So it's a really small town in the Eastern Cape. I'm just going to focus in on writing, and I'm going to be working on a young adult novel.
Fantastic.
So I'm going to have to write without all the swear words. I'm going to have to be more relatable to younger readers. So that's going to be an interesting challenge. But I'm looking at an entirely different way of writing.
It's an interesting area to go into, because I'm not sure that the relationship that kids have to language is what... is the same kind of relationship that, you know, that for example, I would have had. Maybe you had a different experience because you're younger. But swearing doesn't have the same kind of stigma as it did. It's ubiquitous. And I wonder if it's really kind of educationally or parentally sound to kind of edit that out of fiction and literature that kids come across. Mm. What do you think?
I mean, I would agree. I don't think that swearing is anything foreign to kids. But, I mean, it's, at the end of the day, it all comes down to the publisher and the editorial process. And when it comes to a young adult novel, they will absolutely edit out swear words. So, I mean, then it might be my opinion that swearing is totally fine when it comes to particularly young adults. I mean, teens who are coming into adulthood, I think it's totally fine to have swearing in literature. But, you know, high schools and publishing houses might disagree.
So let's explore that a little. So it may well be that you edit out swearing, but you would be perfectly happy to deal with topics such as gender-based violence, just general violence, identity, and these are really tough and you know they call for honesty, for courage, I suppose. It seems like a weird kind of editorial policy to edit out a couple of swear words, but expect kids to engage with stuff that is meaningful and challenging and takes them to, as literature should do, takes them to places where they're not comfortable.
Yeah.
Think about race, think about the kind of experience that most of the peoples in our country, but maybe countries all over the world have in terms of race and what is literature meant to do?
Mm. I think it must absolutely delve into race, into gender, into queerness, into identity, into violence, into all these things, which I intend to write for a young adult audience as well. I think it's not unfamiliar territory. I think there is a way to write about these issues without swearing, you know, and to be honest and radically honest about them without swearing as well. There are many ways to do it. And I think...
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what you're saying about swearing is true, but I'm saying that the actual substance of what you're talking about is much, much more challenging, much more disturbing, much more unsettling than, you know, the swear word.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the swear words are the least of what's disturbing about these issues.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an arbitrary thing that publishers maybe would fixate on.
Yeah. So, Mia, can we talk a little bit about power of literature to confront, maybe let's talk about race, which is the biggest challenge in our country, is maybe one of the biggest issues that kids are going to be facing in South Africa.
Mm.
Talk a little bit about how you would like your writing to be to be dealing with that kind of stuff.
This is a challenging topic. So, I mean, I am colored, I identify as colored, and all my characters are colored characters. And I feel... that I might take a departure from that, but I mean, there was a reason that I wrote in that way, because I feel one needs to, as far as possible, stay in your lane and not try and hijack other people's narratives, you know, people to tell their own stories. And so if you are writing, say, a character of a different race, which I haven't really done, you need to, well, I did have a white character that I just took the piss out of, but I mean, you need to be quite...
You did indeed. You did indeed. Which was lovely.
which I don't feel bad about, but I mean, I think you need to be quite sensitive to how you portray particularly characters of other races. You need to handle that with care and sensitivity, and you need to not, you obviously need to be careful of tropes. You need to, It's a tough one. So I know there have been very successful novelists who have written characters outside of their race. There have also been novelists who have written outside of the race and been completely ripped to shreds because they haven't done it in a way that should be done, or that's, you know, acceptable. So I think writing about race is not something that I shy away from. It's crucial to identity, so I explore it quite a lot in my work, in my journalistic work, and in my fiction. But I do it from a place that is familiar to me and to my upbringing and to my own identity. And so, you know, in that way, I feel like I can speak about what I'm speaking about. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I mean, that's really fascinating, because I mean, what you're saying is that you have most authenticity and credibility when you tell your story, even though you can raise issues that are more universal or more applied to other racial kind of struggles that people are having.
Yeah, so I mean, within my own identity, I can look at things like colorism, which exists kind of in colored culture, but exists within other, you know, race groups as well. I am quite light of complexion, and so I don't experience what is really the really terrible side of colorism, but I'm very aware of that. And I think writing from a place of care, writing from a place of realization of your own positionality, is what's really integral when you write about race, you know.
The other topic that you are obviously interested in is gender-based violence. Mm. I mean, the overarching theme of Mehmet Feleh has got to do with gender-based violence. And can you talk a little bit about...
Sure. So gender-based violence, again, it's a tough topic and a tough thing to write about. And I mean, the way that I chose to address it was kind of in a dystopian sense. For every act of gender-based violence, there would be... some sense of retribution. And so I think that taking it out of its natural context and saying, well, in the ideal world, this is how gender-based violence would be responded to, can be quite a cathartic and healing thing. So I looked at it in a way that explored, you know, if the world were to be just, how would gender-based violence be responded to? And I think it's tough to write about gender-based violence, particularly if you've ever experienced it on any level, because then you are processing trauma as well as writing about a very difficult topic. But I think there's something healing in that as well, only if you are ready to write about it. So I think for young writers or writers who want to address that topic, if they've had any trauma, I think that it can almost be re-traumatizing to address that and to write about it. So I think it's the kind of thing that you need to be very careful about writing. You need to have maybe a support structure, people to hold space for you while you are writing that kind of content, I think is quite important.
But clearly for you, there's a therapy involved in talking about gender-based violence. And maybe that's violence in general, because you spoke a little earlier about your interest in Quentin Tarantino and those movies, which I mean, I can absolutely get. I mean, every now and again, when I'm feeling bleak about the world, I like a Jack Reacher, because, you know, it's just so immediate and so clear, and there is something quite, you spoke about cathartic, but there's something quite therapeutic about knowing that there's a kind of immediate solution to the illness and wrongs of the world. Is that your approach to violence more generally?
I think it's just simpler than that. I think I've got a lot of anger and a lot of rage, and in my mind I kill like 1,000 people a day, so I can just do that all in
have more wine, Mia, have more wine.
So, you know, I can't exact these acts of violence in everyday life, but I can do it through writing. And I think, you know, everybody can do that through writing. And I think everybody, there's a latent anger in each and every one of us, and so that can come out in text rather than, you know, in reality.
In reality, yeah. Mia, thank you for your courage, for using your words with such, I think therapeutic is the good word, you say cathartic, but it is fearless, and it is courageous, and I think that what you are offering young people in our country is priceless, and I really wish you well. I know that you're going to be doing amazing things in the future. Look forward to the influence that you have on our young people to stimulate reading, creativity, and to introduce topics that are so really important that we are desperate to have to make front of mind for kids. So many topics that we've spoken about: mental health, gender-based violence, violence generally, racism, sexism, injustice. So what you're doing is wonderful, and I really, really appreciate having had this opportunity to talk to you about your work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you. And thank you for having me and for being able to delve into these tough issues with me.
Fine Music Radio's Creative Teen Talk podcast series was hosted by headmaster, educator and parent Mark Faulkner. It was produced by FMR's Vanessa Levenstein and Ewan Inglis. FMR.